You are listening to a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. Any opinions expressed within are solely those of the participants and do not reflect the views of WRCT Radio Incorporated. Questions and comments can be addressed to the Public Affairs Director at pa@wrct.org or by calling 412-621-0728. Live from WRCT Studios in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Hour, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Okay, the Gremlins try to always take me down, and especially on Wednesday nights. And again, the cold weather, snow back, and we're heading into the finish of January. And this is the Total Education Hour with Neil Haley, and I'm excited to welcome the program. First, my co-host, Jason, the public school guy. Jason, how are you? Gremlins last week canceled our show because of internet issues. Thank you, Armstrong. And then this week, our recording system didn't work, but I still figured out how to make it work. How are you, Jason?
I'm doing well. I'm just glad to be on.
Exactly. So Jared can't call in. And then also, I'd like to welcome my other co-host, Peter Elvidge. Peter, how are you? And you know, it's what's really funny is that you guys got on, but no one else could get on today. How are you, Peter?
I'm doing good. And yeah, I can relate. You know, the Gremlins, they come at weird times, man. But hey, we're on right now. We're going to roll with it. And I look forward to conversation.
Exactly. So let's go to the education news, because I'm just going to hit that and see what we're going to go from there. I mean, it's still our good friends at educationnews.org disappeared. It was just the saddest thing in the world. I guess because Donald Trump's president, they don't need to have any issues about what's going on in education because they're getting everything they want. So let's kind of jump right into specifically, let's see the best education we can jump to. Let's go to Fox News right off the bat. The real news, Jason, right off the bat, Fox News.
Yeah, they're real all right.
All right, but, but okay, let's see what education topics they bring to the table before the Huffington Post. Everything's loading nice and slow. Okay, that's not what I wanted to hear today, as I'm just trying to find the situation, but Fox is loading too slow. Is that a gremlin issue? Who knows? Let's go to the Huffington Post and see if that loads faster. Good.
You ought to try NPR. They got a lot of education stuff on there, too.
Yeah, I'm going to go. But inside the voucher schools, the Scientology, that was our last conversation. I wonder if this is new or nothing. It goes right back to indoctrination. I'd like to get latest education news. So we'll go over to the Washington Post, and maybe they'll have something new. It looks like everyone is... All right, here we go. Education Washington Post. All right, let's see. 17 minutes ago, their school deleted an article on a teacher's firing. These teens published it themselves. Okay. Let's see what happens there. And we're interested in. Don't tell me they're not letting me read. They said I have to pay, keep reading for $10 or a dollar. Are you kidding me? What's happening tonight? Let's see if they let me now. They let me now. Okay. They're trying to sell it. Come on now. It disappears again? Are you okay, Washington Post? Thank you very much. So let's go to the topic and go. We're getting out of there. NPR, Jason called it. All right, so at least we're going to have news, or are they going to charge us? Laptops and phones in the classroom, yay or nay? Or a third way. Great topic to start out the show. Jason, you and I had this technology discussion a couple years ago, how you really can't survive if you don't send your kids with technology. Remember we had the argument about, you know,
what I said is that you can't fight City Hall. It's, you know, it's here. And there's not much we can do about it. So better find a way to incorporate it.
Exactly, but pretty much that you had to have it almost as a prerequisite now to have some some sort of device, and now it's gone to the point where I argue in a lot of ways where we are trying to keep kids off phones, we're trying to keep them off specific social media, but that's the direction of this world. This is where we're going, and in the classroom, mm-hmm. and it's basically teachers have to kind of understand. So, Jason, tell us specifically how you allow cell phones in your classroom, and what is your classroom policy?
Well, my school just purchased computers for all the students at the high school, so cell phones aren't necessary. They don't have to need. They don't need them. They shouldn't have them out at all. But what ends up happening is all the kids want to listen to music all the time. So what they'll do is they'll put their earbuds in and they'll never take them out. So I'm constantly telling kids to take their earbuds out. Today, they had a pop quiz. They were supposed to study for a take-home test in my classroom. And kids, as soon as they're done with the test, what do? They pop on their phones. I looked at them and said, there's absolutely no reason for you to have your phone out. Put it away. And they all put it away, and they gave me a dirty look like I just told them that they had to slap their mama. It's amazing how addicted these kids are to this technology.
Oh, that's really scary. It is true. And I agree.
And you have to have technology in the modern day and age because technology is in the workplace, so we have to get them to work on those kinds of things. But it's becoming increasingly difficult to be able to organize kids and keep kids focused because, you know, as soon as they take a test, they want to get on their phones, right? Well, what are they doing? They're texting their friends. Hey, this is what's going on. I've caught kids this year texting each other what's on the net, on the test from one period to the other. I mean, it becomes rampant with cheating. It creates a lot of issues. But these are issues that we have to deal with in a modern classroom in order to be able to train these kids for the workplace whenever they go to work.
It's so true. I mean, and the thing is, distractions. Distractions are a big thing, Peter. When we talk about technology, we run into these distractions. And that's got to be a big, big concern in the classroom is the distractions and to teach kids how to all that. You know what I mean? So kind of explain that, Peter, to us and break it down. Yeah.
So, you know, I definitely understand that because I've seen that in so many incidences, whether I was in school back in my years or currently today with some students that I've worked with, you know, having, you know, basically a compact computer in your pocket you can whip out and you can text anybody or listen to music or things like that at any given time. It's both a blessing and a curse at the same time. And it, like you said, we need to continue trying to integrate with it, you know, because obviously, like you said, technology is here today. But it is a major concern because, you know, like you're giving instructions or you try to learning a lesson or things like that, and it they can get in the way. My personal experience is that when I was through like my high school years in particular, was when I was just starting to kind of sort of speak into the cell phone world. And I got used to using one in my junior and senior year, but my sophomore and freshman years, I never used one. I would have loved to have had a cell phone, you know, for calculating and things like that, instead of like, so to speak, going out and having to buy this certain type of custom graphing calculator. I would have loved to have just downloaded an app for like 90% less. But you know, that's what happened. And, I think it's going to be a struggle going forward. But, you know, one of the major things that we've done is that some schools, instead of giving laptops to the students, they give tablets, and they have pre-designed firmware in them so that they're restricted to only doing certain things. I don't know how widespread of, you know, the ability is for different schools to do this, but that is definitely an option that some schools are exploring to, you know, as for instance, using music, those apps are disabled, or, you know, being able to text or instant message, those are disabled, like basic things like your internet and then like calculators and things like that are activated, but everything else is disabled. So some thoughts to throw into the mix here.
We're getting on the Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT, and I'm with Jason, the public school guy, Peter Elvidge. And we're talking about the distractions of cell phones, yay or nay, in the classroom. And as Jason said before, guess what? You cannot keep these kids from not having it, but you could have classroom rules regarding it. But these kids are so awesome. I remember the days when I had to worry about kids passing notes in class. Boy, oh boy, have things changed when I started as a teacher to now. I don't think anyone passes a note.
They just send a text.
They just send a text. And they're so smooth and so skilled at it, they could do it in 2 seconds, right? You can't even spot it, Jason, in such a quick way that they're able to.
Oh, no, you can spot it because they sit there and they stare at it because they don't have. And a lot of them don't have the capacity to know how to do it with their thumbs without looking. But they just text each other. It makes the environment a little bit different. It does create distraction. It does create a problem, in the long run, because as we're trying to deal with all the distractions that technology brings to the table, of which it is a myriad of distractions, you have cyberbullying going on at the same time. Even if you buy them computers or tablets or some other technological device that you somehow try to control, the truth of the matter is that they're going to use that for academic purposes only. They'll go to their phones and they'll use their phones for non-academic purposes. And these kids on a daily basis sit there and stare at the phones. And these phones have been designed to be addictive. The makers of the phones, the makers of the software have already said, we designed this on purpose so that people would be addicted to them. So now we have a generation of people who are addicted to their phones, who we in the classroom are attempting to try to teach so that they can better deal with their world. But now they're, by the admission of the people who made the technology, are addicted to it.
Right. And I agree with you, Peter and Jason, on this and the problem. And maybe the computers and eliminate the cell phone. But we're going to talk about how kids will not want to give up their cell phone. You could create the relationship, but having them just turn them in like we did back in the day at St. Mary's at the beginning of the day and at the end of the day, you turn in your cell phone, would never happen. So we get back. We're going to continue with Jason, the public school guy, and Peter Elvidge. You're listening to Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh. And we're streaming live at WRCT.org, hashtag WRCT. We get back. Jason and Peter and myself, Neil Haley, will be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh. And we're streaming live at WRCT.org, hashtag WRCT. My third cup of coffee, and finally I got a little bit of a wire going here into the late wee hours again as the weather got colder in Pittsburgh again. Our little spring has not sprung yet in January, and it's back to cold weather and snow. And in Minnesota, I know they have blizzards, but we're not going to talk about Minnesota. And I tell you, Minnesota must be so upset with themselves right now, where they had a chance to host their own Super Bowl and they choked. But let's go. Terrible way for them to. All right, so laptops and phones in the classroom, yay, nay, or a third way? Well, Peter said the third way, and that means that the cell phones can be in the classroom, but the work is going to be involved in a laptop. So let's go to this article now. If something on their desk or in their pocket rings or vibrates, they will lose focus. Students are doing so much in the class, distraction, disruption, and isn't really something I'm worried about. How should teachers, both K through 12 and college, deal with the use of computers and phones by students in the class? On the other hand, those sleek little supercomputers promise to connect us to all human knowledge. On the other hand, they're scientifically designed for some world's top geniuses to feel as compelling as oxygen. So where does that leave teachers? Should you ban these devices in the classroom, let students go whole hog, or is there a happy medium? This is seemingly a simple topic, ends up being what a professor and pedagogy expert calls a Rorschach test for so much that's going on in education. Recently, the California State Teachers Pension Fund weighed in as a large investor in Apple, the makers of the iPhone, in an open letter. Along with other activists, shareholder, they called the company digital distraction among youth to make it easier to limit young people's use. So, Peter, Jason, that's the concern now. As we talked about, when we talked about that before, that's the concern we have, right, dude? It's the concern is that it's so addicting. These kids are just on at such a young age, and they just don't know how to let go of their phones, and it really does impede their learning. Right, Jason?
Yeah, it doesn't beat their learning. I mean, because they're too busy playing games, or they're too busy text being social, or, you know, they lack the skill set to learn how to focus. And without that skill set, then what are they going to do when they try to do other things in their life? And that becomes a very real issue moving forward. But that being said, this is a relatively new phenomena in education. And so, I mean, we are trying to deal with it, and there's a lot of ways we are, but it was that we banned it completely. Well, that didn't work. And now we allowed them to have it, but it's not in the classroom. Well, that's not working. Now it's teacher discretion, and we'll see how that goes. I mean, in my classroom it works, but I'm a taskmaster. But it doesn't work as well as I think it does. I can guarantee you there are kids who are abusing it, despite the fact that I think I have it under control.
And Peter, same thing goes for you on this, the addiction to kids and how Jason's a taskmaster, and we know that for a fact as we deal with him every week on this show. But Peter, you agree as well that we just have to figure out a better way and to kind of decrease this addiction, as Apple is kind of firsthand really addressing this finally.
Yeah, I mean, because like you said, it's a questionable ability as to the student whether they can handle or not handle their phones. And a lot of them, you know, like if we're using the example of middle school, high school, or, you know, whenever their parents happen to give them a cell phone, they're like, ooh, shiny. I mean, you know, so they're fascinated with it. They want to try everything new with it. They want to text people. It's that not only that addictive personality, but there's also that new shiny personality that always comes with the devices. Which is a major problem. And something I want to point out too, because this is actually something that happens to me, is that when people abuse these like privileges, like let's say if like a teacher is allowing students to use pieces of technology, you know, while they're in class, and in my cases or in other students' cases, you know, it betters our learning experience. And when it becomes to a point where it's overused and overabused, teachers may decide to switch their ways on things and say completely no technology. And then not only does it hurt the students who could benefit from it, but the students that do benefit from it.
All right, we're on the Total Education Hour with Neil Haley, Jason the Public School Guy, and Peter Alvagini. We're talking about cell phones and distractions, yay or nay. I would say we really can't do anything. I think we have to allow them, but I think this is the biggest point right now. You got these great devices when you're in a computer class. Okay, guys, when we're in computer classes or if we are in any other type of environment, we need to teach these kids how to use it in a very professional way, learning that the phone is not just about texting. It's about connecting to the environment in so many different ways. And if we don't do that, we are going to really, they're not going to be able to handle the next moves in the 21st century. All right, let's see another topic as we go into this thing. Budgets suffer after a drop in international student enrollment? No. Student loan defaults on the rise. Texas special education, other education news. Oh, my gosh. Well, do you think this is going to be pro-Trump? I don't think so. Let's see. Student loan defaults on the rise. Texas special education. Let's go. Hello, money is on our minds in the mid-January edition of the weekly roundup. Student loan default is in crisis, report says. Almost 40% of students who entered college in the fall of 2003 may default on their student loans by 2023. This is the conclusion of the Brockington's Institute, which analyzed 20 years of federal data for two groups of student borrowers. Previously published data from the Department of Education looked at default rates just 3 to 5 years after borrowing. The new long-term analysis found that for-profit students and African-American college students had the highest rates of default. For Black students who attended for-profits starting in the 1990s, 2 out of 3 eventually defaulted on their loans. Jason, are we really in a big trouble if all these loans are defaulted and that these kids never can pay them back?
Well, we're not in trouble. They are. But here's what makes it even better is that Betsy DeVos, our Secretary of Education, has just made it more difficult for those people who are defrauded from going to for-profit schools to sue and get their money back. They've actually suspended the program, or reduce the program that allows for students who are defrauded by fraudulent educational organizations to recoup their money.
Oh, that's not good. That's not good.
And that just happened.
Well, do you think that's Betsy helping another rich person, Jason?
Because the company she I think they reduced it because the company they used to try to get back that money is a company that she had a relationship with prior to becoming Secretary of Education. So, yeah, I could see a correlation.
And, Peter, I mean, this defaulting on student loans, the kids are trying to make it, get a job in their career set. Now they're sitting there and they have these loans they can't make payments on. They default, then they can't get certain credit cards or they can't get certain loans because of this, Peter. And it really puts them in a rut to ever be able to go after their career because they have to just kind of be paying off things the rest of their lives.
Yeah, it makes it more difficult in numerous different situations. Like, just like you said, like trying to figure out how to do credit cards, how to get, progressive towards your job and things. It's more difficult. And the way that it's progressing is that it could be, like Jason said, dangerous for, our future. Because it's going to be so much, so much money going out, but not enough money coming back in, so to speak.
Again, we're on the Toleducation Hour with Neil Haley, with Peter Elvidge, and Jason, the public school guy. And I'm streaming live again on WRCT.org and hashtag WRCT as we have a conversation involving student loan default and what the issue with student loan default is and the crisis that's happening. Here, let's continue the conversation, how tax changes could affect state and school funding. The tax overhaul just passed by Congress makes big changes to 529 college savings plans. NPR's Ed Team reports, namely, it will now let families use the money in these accounts, money that is allowed to grow tax-free, to pay for tuition not only for colleges but also K-12 private schools. Uh-oh, Jason, this again goes...
Yeah, go ahead. I'm not surprised.
But won't this help?
Yeah,
go ahead.
I mean, she is what she is, and Betsy DeVos is supporting this kind of concept. So why is anybody even remotely surprised by it?
I don't think we shouldn't be remotely surprised at all. But what about, Jason, would this also help pay for college student loans if we allow these to be tax-free?
They already use the 529s are supposed to be used for colleges. That's the design purpose of it.
By adding K-12, that's less opportunity.
Well, now they're adding K-12 because now they want to make sure that private schools get people who go there and they mm-hmm. dangle a little carrot up there in front of poor people by saying, hey, give the money to the private school that's in your local area and they'll help your kid get to college. 529 plan was originally designed for colleges, not for K-12. This, I believe, mm-hmm. is a bad decision because it's not going to precipitously change the who goes to private school, and private schools will gain an advantage that way, be they parochial or secular. And it's just going to continue to it's a continual assault upon public education.
Okay. All right. So Peter, what is your response? You don't like this? I like this. I mean, I honestly want tax-free to help.
I know you do.
I know I do. But go ahead, Peter. What is your thought?
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking about it from the standpoint of, like you said, with basically, how do I put it? So with taking the money and then making it available to, lower education fields, it's making it possible for wink, wink choice in lower grades. But at the same time, it's like you said, it's dangling a carrot in front of people. And you just don't know. And particularly at the younger ages, you know, we're going to help you get to college. Well, I mean, at that time, depending on who you are you thinking about college? Or are you thinking just trying to get the education of that particular year of school? I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence on both sides on this, to be honest.
See, I'm for it because I mean, I think it's because I look at specifically some of these taxes are outrageous. We could go to tax plans and how I'm excited about the new tax thing that's happening for.
Are you? Yeah, I am.
But we're not. That's not the show.
Oh, good. Let's talk about that.
No, we can't because it's not education.
Let's talk about the $1.4 trillion in the economy that they did, take any spending out on, that they're going to have to take from, but they will take it from poor people. Does that make sense?
Did we have a government shutdown or not?
Oh, we did. But it had nothing to do with the tax plan.
Is the government still shut down? Do we need to call the U.S.
You pay attention because on Monday they open up the government again.
Okay, so I really have not been paying attention to politics.
Maybe you should pay attention.
No, I only pay attention to my news, which is all that matters. I haven't. All right, let's go back. An expansion of the mission ultimately drives more use of these plans. It would cost some states dearly in lost tax revenue. This is because 33 states offer families an added incentive to use the plan's deduction or credit on their state income taxes. That's the other thing, Jason, is deductions are going to disappear, right? With the new tax plan.
For the most part.
But why the heck?
Because they doubled the standard deduction.
Yeah, and so. And I'm sure you're excited about that. States are either going to have to accept a loss in the income tax base or do something unpopular to repair the hole. All right. Meanwhile, the new $10,000 cap on state and local tax deduction makes it more expensive for taxpayers to fund local services, including public schools. A fight on public schools, right, Jason? Mm-hmm. This is what they want to do.
Neil, I'm glad people like you love it because, you know, that really helps us.
I'm loving it. Well, see, I'm loving it just because I want some decrease in taxes. But what is that going to happen?
I know, because decreases in all taxes is where it's at. But you realize that it's going to raise your taxes, right?
We're going education speed.
At the local level. At the local or the state level, they're going to have to raise taxes in order to pay for schools, in order to pay for services. So you're not losing any taxes. You're not paying federal tax. You'll be paying state and local tax. So, good job, Congress.
All right, let's go back and see. Big federal civil rights report on school funding. Texas, okay, let's go to the special education law. Oh, yeah. Almost a third of college students take at least one class online. Oh, this is a good one. An annual survey finds accelerated growth in the number of higher education students who take online courses. The study was sponsored by a nonprofit online learning consortium. The education company Pearson and consulting Titan Partners. It found that online students are nearly evenly split between those who study completely online. So, Jason, you think any online course is just the same legitimacy as going to the classroom, right, Jason?
Well, I mean, how do you guarantee that they're doing their work? You can't. So, again, we go back to the idea of consistency and transparency and neither of those things are there. So, again, I am dubious at best.
Okay, so I think you're right. It's very easy to cheat. There's no way of monitoring that. And it's something that makes life easier for kids. Peter, you're a proponent of online education, aren't you, Peter?
Well, I mean, a part of my education has been online before, and now I guess it would depend on your definition of online education. I mean, if you had, let's say, here's your course, get it done, you're not in contact with an actual human, then yeah, that would be something to be skeptical of, you know, to make sure that they're doing their work, that they understand it, you know, that they don't just pass by just getting answers, you know, so to speak, from other places or the internet. So when I did online classes, is not only for the sake of my accessibility, but for the sake of just, you know, I like being personal, is I always interacted with a teacher or with a professor. I both think of it as a positive thing, kind of like, you know, when we're talking about the cell phones in the classroom, it's definitely a progressive thing because we have a lot of technology and it's opening up a lot of opportunities and worlds to us. But at the same time, it can be, you know, in some instances, harmful or, you know, scary, depending on, you know, what you choose. So I would say if you're looking at online education, be very careful and always make sure that you know what you're going in for and that you can always get in contact with someone. Because in my opinion, if you are going for an online course and you don't speak to anybody and it's just like here, you turn it into a website and here you get a score and that's it. I don't really favor for those types of ideas for online education.
Again, you're listening to the Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh, and we're streaming live at WRCT.org, hashtag WRCT. When we get back, we're going to continue with Jason, Peter, and the Gremlins. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh, and we're streaming live at WRCT.org, hashtag WRCT, hashtag ##, as the Total Education Hour continues with some interesting conversation. And again, online education ultimately needs to assess kids in more of a paper writing assess. If you're giving them tests online as a professor, online education, there's cheating. But if they're writing research papers and they have to show specific ability to analyze and apply the knowledge, I like online education. But if you're thinking you're going to conduct a test and think that those kids aren't going to cheat and go and copy and paste, you're full of garbage that it's not going to happen.
They already know it. They know it happens. No one's that naive that they don't know that it's happening. Everybody knows it's happening. The problem is catching them. And the other issue, especially when it comes to K-12 education, is those people who are taking that class are paying for it. So now it's just like going to a private school. Are you going to bust a kid who's paying for it, whose parents are saying, I'm going to pay for it, and your salary is based upon them paying that tuition? My guess is
true.
No.
I think so let's move from that to Texas violated special education law. The federal government fines. Really? I'm shocked by that one, Jason. I'm shocked about Texas violating special education law. I just think that Texas really knows education. Like Bo knows sports, Texas knows education. So
how'd they violate this law?
I'm wondering.
Yeah.
But how much is special education being violated in specific areas anyways? As we talked about in one of our convos about how I don't know if special education, and this is a conversation if we ever have Jarrett back on the line, but Jarrett couldn't even get on the line tonight because of Gremlins. But he's busy focusing on 2018 and losing another 10 pounds working on his Pilates at 4:30 in the morning. He'll be up at 4:30. Jason will be up at 4:30. I'll be up at 7, but I won't be in bed till 1 or 2. So there we go. So I think between Jason and I, Jason, again, we've talked about before, doesn't sleep at all. There was a study, Jason, that I think is a garbage study, so we'll do that topic. I wish I could find it that my wife picked up because she had to say, you don't sleep. Well, we'll talk about that later, but let's go to the special education law. By setting a statewide target of 8.5% of students enrolled in special education, the Texas Education Agency violated its obligation to provide a free, appropriate public education to all students with disabilities. This is the finding of the Department of Education after a 15-month monitoring process. The 8.5% target was brought to light by an investigation in the Houston Chronicle nationwide. About 13% of students are in special education. Whoa, little bit higher.
How do you determine that you're only going to have 8% of the population?
That's ridiculous.
Special needs.
I can't.
How do you predetermine that?
Well, the others, they're SOL. So, I mean, that's honest opinion is.
Well, I mean, what that tells you is that then they're going to discriminate against those people who are special needs but are late to the game because it becomes too expensive. So that is an absolute, you know, that is a violation of the civil rights of those students who have and should have IEPs.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I agree with you. And so I don't understand why the heck this is considered a problem by only at 8.5%. And then they found out, but 13% of the students are special education. But nationwide it's 13%. I see. So they're just trying to limit.
Just trying to reduce costs.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just trying to reduce costs.
But see, but isn't that the same thing happening all over the country, Peter? Isn't this happening everywhere where they say, you know, I don't think your son or daughter has special needs. They don't fit that. They're just average. Peter, we hear this all the time, mm-hmm. right? So we don't put them in special ed.
I have heard that from my own experiences because I was considered to be vision impaired and have a disability, but I needed very minimalistic adjustments to my work back then. And because of this, a lot of the services and a lot of the things that I needed or asked for were put into question whether they were considered needed. And when they were deemed not needed, but I needed them for accommodations, I didn't receive them. So I can definitely say from firsthand experience of where that's coming from. And then, the thing is because they're like, well, you know, it needs to be a high enough need so that we spend money on you. And this is like, mind you, something as if like making a test, like a final exam to a class accessible. And it was not, it was not made accessible because that particular resource cost too much. So I've definitely seen it and experienced it myself in my lifetime.
And that's the problem, as Jason talked about, is limiting it to a certain percentage when you don't know certain areas in the population is a far more than 8.5% that are special ed.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Jay?
Yeah. I mean, the reality is we have a civil right that's been federally mandated for students who have certain disabilities, both cognitive and physical. And we cannot deny those people their services based upon the fact of cost, despite the fact that their cost is exorbitant in comparison to a student who doesn't have those disabilities. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I'm not arguing against the IEP for those people who are listening. You cannot, as a district, not give services to somebody who legitimately qualifies for services. That is a violation of civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, definitely. And it's a frustration beyond belief that this is still happening in public education, and specifically enough.
Well, it's always going to happen in public education when the concept of cost outweighs the benefit of the student.
All right.
And that's the problem with public education, is that everybody's looking at the dollar sign and not looking at the result with the student.
Well, and on top of that, too, is that there's experiences where, like, the cost is so high for a service or for some sort of accommodation that they won't openly, how do I put it this way? They will have the information to the person's rights in a certain area, but they won't disclose the person's rights to them specifically. So the ignorance of like the parents or the student's rights is kind of, it's entrapping them to not knowing, what they can do to get their accommodations properly. So it's a mix of things. It could be on the school side, it could be on the parents and student side. You never really know, but you can't deny someone with a disability accommodation, even if it's a huge amount, because it's like denying someone, who has full, who doesn't have a disability, the ability to walk or to see or to, there's just things like that. It's limiting to such a point where they're able to perform, and then you take away something and they're not able to perform even remotely. If their level is below what's considered normal standard, they can't even perform at that level, which is unfortunate and it's, completely wrong.
All right, so again, we're on the Toll Education Hour with Peter Elvidge, Jason the Public School, and myself, Neil Haley. And we're going to go to a topic that we're going to cut to right after the break. I guess we got about 3 minutes to the break, so I'm going to go right into the topic. It's a topic my wife had to bring up. Now, Neil, you're going to go to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning like last night? And I said, I'm fine. There's no big deal. Oh, there's a problem when you don't sleep enough. There's research out there. Someone shared it on Facebook. So it's gospel. It was shared on Facebook, Jason. It's gospel that certain people can, if you don't get a certain amount of hours of sleep, you're hurting your health, Jason.
But you are.
But you're the one that's but you're the one that's the proponent of doing it, Jason, not sleeping.
Of course you're hurting you're hurting your heart.
Okay, just my heart. Go ahead, Jason, let's hear
one. Well, you have to have one. But knowing that you're a conservative, you have to have one. So you probably have to become a liberal.
No, so Jason, your average sleep. So this is, again, the Total Education Hour. Hot topic, sleep, especially when we record on Wednesday nights late. How many hours sleep do you average a day?
Tonight I'll probably get about 4.5 hours of sleep.
I'm going to be hitting it probably at 5 to 5.5 hours. But yesterday I got 4, and it was not a very fun situation. Peter, how many hours will you get? And then I want to go into this research study, what's up on top of my head. But it said that because I don't get any sleep, I shouldn't remember anything. Well, that's definitely a crock of whatever, you know.
The absolute least amount of sleep that I will do for myself, and this is like if I need to push things or move things around, is 6 hours of sleep. I won't go any less than 6 hours of sleep. Like using tonight as an example, I'll get a full 8 hours worth of sleep. But I can definitely say from the experience, it sucks to have less than 6 or 4 hours worth of sleep. You can't concentrate, you can't think, and just trying to do stuff is just like a hassle at times. But you know what? There are those days, though, for all of us, you know, as business owners or as teachers or educators, you know, that you have those late nights and you just got to keep rolling as best as you can. Or maybe you just have some sort of a really good groove or full of energy and you just kind of keep going. And I've done this too, where you just don't realize what time it is. All of a sudden you realize it's 2-3 o'clock in the morning. You're like, oh, crap, I should have been asleep already.
All right. So we get back. We're going to continue the conversation. 11:43 in Eastern, 10:43 Peter time. You're listening to Total Education Hour at 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh. And we're streaming live at WRCT.org, #WRCT. We get back to the sleep thing just to talk about the guy who was doing the study looked like he got no sleep at all. So I don't understand it. He looks like he a Mack truck hit him. So people need to check that out. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Total Education Hour at 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh. And we're streaming live at WRCT.org, #WRCT. I'm with Peter Alvage, Jason the Public School Guy, and myself, the host and of the mostest, Neil Haley. And thinking about this topic, okay, my wife has to show me the video. Jason, again, agrees that enough sleep could hurt your heart. Okay. But the things that came out, Jason and I would disagree with. First one, if you do not sleep enough, you will not remember anything, will not retain new memory. Well, What hours of sleep does it need? I can remember things with 2 hours sleep. So, I mean, 4 hours sleep.
Well, no. What happens is you have to go through one REM cycle for sleep. It takes 3 hours for your brain to cycle to 3 hours, and that allows your brain to actually take from short term to long term memory and process some of those memories. So, yeah, you can remember some things. You're not wrong, but you're not reaching your full capacity by doing that.
You know, this actually reminds me of when I was looking, I can't remember what I stumbled upon, but I remember looking online and I remember seeing that when you are younger, you have a longer amount of sleep that's needed for your necessary functions to concentrate.
The older you get, the less sleep you need,
But the older that you get, and I don't know specific ages, but the older that you get, you can actually decrease from 10 hours to 8 hours to, 7. I think they say at the absolute max for older is 6 to 7 hours that you can have to still have, good functionality and things. Although I wouldn't recommend it. The better the sleep, the more sleep, the better. But it's definitely possible that if you have at least 6 to 7 hours of sleep, depending on your age, you could be fine.
See, I think...
But old people take naps, and that helps.
I believe...
Yeah, that too, yeah.
I believe that you don't need sleep. I remember studies we
Neil, you fly in the face of all that, all is true about medical science. So there's that. We're just going to call you an outlier.
No, the point is, but here's the reason why you get less sleep. If you don't fall asleep right on the dot like me, I will literally go drink 3 cups of coffee, stay up enough, then go and crash at 2 o'clock in the morning on a couch or in the bed and just sleep straight through till 7. Not takes me 2 seconds to crash, get up, and I'm back to normal again. Now, I also...
Why are you drinking all that coffee? Why don't you just stay awake? See, I don't drink coffee.
Shoot, I would be dead.
Because you need coffee to stay awake. So you actually do need that sleep.
But here's my other point. I believe you can catch up as well. I believe if you could have 5 hours the rest of the week or 5 to 6 hours of sleep, then hit 8 to 9 on the weekends, you will be caught up. Research
well, that's what happens. Your body tries to catch up. That's what happens. But it's not healthy whereas you're trying to function on a weekday and do work. You're not functioning at your top capacity.
I think I'm functioning at my top capacity.
Well, I'm glad you do, but you're brain damaged because you're not getting enough sleep. So you're unable to make those kinds of decisions for yourself.
So I can't.
I think your beautiful wife is right here, and you should be listening to her.
Okay, so how can I do that? So I need help, people. Find a way that I could get more sleep. I need help. I need help on the sleep. No, but the guy was saying, first of all, about memory, I think that's a bunch of BS because of me. And then the other thing he talked about.
It's true.
Oh, it's true. So what about you, Jason? You are an outlier as well. You don't sleep at all. You sleep 4.5 hours most of the time, sometimes 4. You say you'll never get the flu, but you get the flu. We know all that story, and you don't wash your hands at times, as you talked about on the show before. Now, so you're an outlier in certain ways. Aren't you afraid if you're only getting 4.5 hours sleep that you can't function to your best of your ability?
Only the good die young, baby. I mean, come on now. I'm good. I'm gonna live a long time.
So maybe Jason's point is without this, the amount of sleep he gets, that's why he doesn't understand why Republicans are better than Democrats. Well, we figured that out. So
I understand that they think that, but they're brain damaged.
All right, let's go to the next topic.
I mean, after all, they did vote for Trump.
Oh my gosh, don't talk about Donald Trump. Mark Cuban for president.
Is there any other way to describe what people voted for outside of brain damage?
I'm going to say Mark Cuban for president. All right, let's go. DeVos, Common Core is dead. A large online charter school is shut down. So DeVos is finally going to get rid of Common Core. Hallelujah. That was one of the greatest things I saw out there. Betsy DeVos has delivered the goods, I'm excited about that. I know Jarrett's.
Is that why you think she's the best Secretary of Education ever?
No, she's not. But she at least did one thing good. So, Jason,
she delivered all the goods.
Yeah, you go. You have to applaud her, right?
No, you do. I don't.
Yeah, no. I mean, seriously, you got to applaud her, saying, "Yay, she did it." Okay.
She's not my Secretary of Education. She does nothing to help me. She wonders why she's not popular with public education.
All right, so are you excited Common Core is done? Are you excited about
that? She could say Common Core is done, but every school has already invested hundreds of millions of dollars nationwide. There's been billions of dollars invested into putting Common Core into curriculum. She may say it's dead, but it's not dead. It's still there. It's going to still be used. It's going to continue to be used. And until she, outlaws it, which she's not allowed to do, it's going to be there. So she could say whatever she wants to say. The truth of the matter is, it ain't going anywhere.
Common Core, Peter, I hope you think it's going to die. I hope you're excited that DeVos is trying to get rid of it. I know Jarrett is already crying in his milk. He's saying, no, this great idea is about to be destroyed. Peter, you're excited if Common Core goes, right?
In my opinion, looking towards education, I think that give or take, you know, a couple or so years, like you said, with technology and everything, the basics or the standards that we used to have towards what education is going to change even from our previous definition. So even just like Common Core and all these different types of organizational methods, they're just going to completely change with the advancements of technology and the way of changing up the way students learn and teachers teach. Am I glad that it's going away? I guess partly because I'm for continuing advancement, but you know, I'm not, because there is some things that, you know, do work and some things that don't work, you know.
Well, we're on the Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT, and I'm with Jason, the public school guy, Peter Elvidge, and myself, Neil Haley, talking about, is Common Core finally dead? I hope so, but as Jason brought up, it's the greatest point, is every textbook in Pennsylvania is Common Core taught. Sometimes the math that comes home for my daughters absolutely makes me so angry. And I don't understand the third and fourth grade stuff or second grade stuff, because just how it's written, and you need to translate it. So I hope Common Core dies. But let's see what the online charter school, I'm not worried about. DeVos to the AEI, Common Core is dead. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos called herself a liar.
Common Core will never die. It will always be.
Common Core
is here to stay, all in front of me.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, I'm sorry, I felt waxing nostalgic there.
Okay. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos called herself a lifelong outsider in the keynote address this week to the American Enterprise Institute, a leading conservative think tank. She told the audience that the national education reform efforts, including No Child Left Behind, Race to the Top, and Common Core, have not worked as hoped. So true, right, Jason? All those things have not worked.
I would agree.
She also cited a survey by the American Federation of Teachers that 60% of its teachers reported having moderate to no influence over the content being taught. The same survey already noted that 86% of teachers said they do not feel respected by DeVos. Well, that's not a surprise. Students of color account for 2/3 of the school-related arrests. Well, we're not getting into that. State's work to keep foster youth in school is incomplete. All right, so we're already out of Betsy DeVos land. And we're going to go to the Huffington Post to close out the show. We always get an interesting topic to close it out.
Go ahead,
Peter.
I actually found a topic, if you're interested in hearing it.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. So I can't remember who established this, but I found this on Facebook actually before our show. And there is actually a simulation type. I don't want to say game because that puts the wrong connotations on it. It's a simulator based upon making schools more protected and more safe for students and teachers surrounding mass shootings and school shootings. And what it is basically you have the ability to be both a teacher, a student, or the person who's trying to get into school to understand like different things of like the layout of your particular school. You know, what different things work and haven't worked in the past, all sorts of different stuff to keep students safer. I thought it was pretty interesting because the ability to integrate the technology and kind of take the school's layout and kind of implement it into a simulator for educators and for higher staff or for security purposes to kind of get some simulations going, I think is an interesting thing. However, a lot of people are saying that it's a completely horrific thing, because the idea is that while you're in the simulation, there are students and there are teachers and there are gunmen. So the idea is that seeing that there are students in the simulation that experience violence in this matter, they think that it's a horrible and a horrific thing that shouldn't be in existence. But at the same time, it prevents the safe and understanding environment for educators and for teachers and for students to protect themselves even more in a crisis situation or a lockdown.
All right. That's an interesting topic. Let's jump to it next week, especially with the school shootings, Peter and Jason, on the rise. How do we stop this, right? Right, Jason?
Yeah, I got a great way of stopping it. Take away guns. But that's a kooky idea.
Do you think Donald Trump agrees with you?
No. But schools do, just to piggyback off of what Peter was saying, schools do have a lot of simulations, usually not with students there, but they will have the police come in and they will do a shooter simulation of which we will act as students, and you'll hear simulated gunshots, and they'll use blanks and that kind of thing. And they show you how to disarm a person who has a gun, both with a long rifle and with a pistol, and you practice that. And I've gone through that training, and I feel a lot more confident now if something were to occur at my district that I could do something to protect my students and myself in that order. In that process. But truth be told is I know how I would react, but I've been in the military and I've been on the sharp end of the spear, whereas I know a lot of my colleagues have never been on the sharp end of the spear. And if there was something to pop off, I'm not sure how most of the people around me would respond. Now, whether or not there should be students in there, to be honest with you, I'm more inclined to think that there should be students involved in that kind of assimilation. And my reasoning is this, is that what the best, and it has to be age appropriate. You're not going to do it with elementary kids. I get that. But with high school kids, I would say that you could, because the truth of the matter is we need to be able to control them. We need to know how they'd respond. And the best thing to do is to have them go through the scenario, game it out in a safe environment, and then move forward from there. They do it in the military. They do it in a lot of other things. It's how sports teams train their players. It's how bands train their players. It's just a matter of just doing it. So that's my thought, but I could be wrong.
All right. So again, what we learned tonight is many different things, but we've learned again that the education system is broken. The news is just absolutely difficult to find. I think our sleep conversation is probably the best, and I just don't believe that sleep matters. Okay, and so that could be.
You're wrong.
So how am I wrong?
Neil, you're flying in the face of all things that is science. Now, unless you're going to say you hate science, you're wrong. The truth of the matter is they've done sleep study after sleep study. They've studied the body. You need to drink 3 cups of coffee late at night just to stay awake so you can say that you don't sleep. I don't drink coffee and I can stay awake and not sleep and be functional. Now, am I as functional as I should be? No, not even remotely close. But my 80% is better than most people's 100%. And I bring it that way. But all joking aside, you do need to get sleep in order to be at full functionality.
And again, my 60% is better than most people's 100%. So I'll even go even further on that.
Wow. You can't even use your other catchphrase. Come on, man.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man. Man, I beat both of you. I got extra steps to my day than just the basics.
That's true. That is true. But I'm bald and beautiful, so when I get up in the morning, I already look good. So that's all I got to say.
No, see, that's, again, the bald means intelligence. Bald means brilliance. Bald means everything. And that's what Jason and I know, is that that's what makes, again, us the most intelligent human beings in the world. That's, again, why my – yeah, go ahead.
Listen, I look at it this way. God made me this way. I shaved my head so I could show more of it. You're welcome.
So exactly. So whenever are we going to get together to do the Bald is Beautiful episode where you and I are on television in front of the whole world talking the Bald is Beautiful episode? Go ahead, Peter.
I'm actually a contender. I'm actually losing a little bit of hair, too, so I'm getting there as well.
There you go. Join the club.
So bald is beautiful. Yep. That's that. That so that's the next quote.
That's a new daytime soap. The bald and the beautiful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right.
There you go.
Okay. Good talking to you, Jason. Good talking to you, Peter. Next week we'll continue with education.
Good night, guys.
With maybe Peter coming up with some hot topics. Take care, guys. Bye bye. That was the Total Education here, guys. Take care. We'll talk next week. Good day.
You are listening to a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. Any opinions expressed within are solely those of the participants and do not reflect the views of WRCT Radio Incorporated. Questions and comments can be addressed to the Public Affairs Director at pa@wrct.org or by calling 412-621-0728.